It's Friday, December 3rd. I'm Stephen Fee, and this is The Pen Pod, a podcast from Pen America. On today's edition, Tough Questions. Pen America CEO Suzanne Nossel walks us through the biggest questions of free speech from the past week. With serious concerns about the freedom of a star Chinese tennis player, how sport can put pressure on that country's government, how two little words can bring on the wrath of university administrators, and The Simpsons and self-censorship. I'm Stephen Fee. That's all coming up on The Pen Pod. As is our habit every week, Pen America CEO Suzanne Nossel joins the Pen Pod for our Tough Questions segment, where we talk about the week's most challenging free expression issues in the U.S. and abroad. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Stephen.
So, Suzanne, I want to start with a tennis player named Peng Shui. You know, after sexual assault allegations that she had made, she was unheard of for a few weeks, resurfaced briefly for a conversation with the IOC. Just this week, the World Organization that manages women's tennis tournaments globally said that because they were unsure of her safety and her ability to speak out, they would be canceling tournaments and activities across China, including Hong Kong. What's your reaction?
Yeah, look, what's happened to her is reminiscent of so many of the Chinese cases that we work on, people who speak out in ways that are seen as critical of the government or dissenting from the CCP, Chinese Communist Party line, and then face these severe repercussions. In the case of our cases, you know, they're often arrested, tried, jailed, sometimes for life. I mean, we have a number of cases of people who are serving life in prison, including Ilham Todi, the Uyghur scholar who we honored back in 2014. And so at some level, I think people are shocked by this. I feel like, you know, I'm not shocked because I know this happens all the time. The only reason it's being talked about as an international incident is because she is a high-profile champion tennis player. And so I am, you know, a perverse way sort of heartened that people are facing up to the reality of how China handles this sort of thing. There is a complete media blackout in terms of talking about her on Chinese social media. That's totally censored. Western institutions, which is an area that we've put a lot of focus on here at Penn, looking at the ramifications of Chinese censorship for the way that Western universities, Hollywood studios, technology companies operate. And so this challenge, dilemma faced by the athletic associations is a very interesting one. And you see a stark contrast between the approach taken by the Women's Tennis Association, which has really been quite forceful and principled and kind of standing up to the Chinese in a way that is rare to see these days, you know, really confronting them and being unwilling to back down and accept quite a flimsy assurances about Peng Shui's safety. Contrast that with the International Olympic Committee, which has a long history of sort of craven bending in the face of Chinese pressure. They like to do business with the Chinese. The Chinese like to hold Olympics. It's gotten more difficult to find host countries to host the games. And so, you know, they sort of have every interest in making sure that the 22 Winter Games go off smoothly and are therefore, you know, taking part in this kind of strange theater of these staged video conferences, supposedly with Peng Shui, you know, saying they've got a dinner planned in January with her, and turning a blind eye to, you know, what's obvious, which is that she's not free to speak out. She's not free to talk about these allegations. The Chinese polity is not able to, and public is not able to debate them. And she's clearly under very severe restrictions, the scope of which, you know, and threats, the scope of which we don't know. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but it's sort of heartening to have a principled actor like the WTA in the mix.
Yeah. Well, let's move to Florida. This week, a professor at a public university in that state is facing some pushback from administrators merely for using the words critical and race in a description of a specialized field as part of his bio online. How is animus toward critical race theory driving a chilling effect on speech in the United States?
Well, look, this is like exactly what we predicted in our educational gag orders report that we released just a few weeks ago, that there would come to be this kind of danger zone that would begin to mushroom around any mention of controversial questions of race. So here you have this course description that, you know, says class, you know, or the professor's work brings a critical lens to studies of race and ethnicity, and all of a sudden the administration is sending up these alarm bells, and, you know, there are these very, very vivid notes of the meeting that the professor held with university leadership, and they say, oh, you know, we're being scrutinized by the legislature, and, you know, we just don't want to take this risk, and other university presidents are losing their job. And, you know, it's just this very palpable way in which the pressure is being felt at every level and kind of cascading downward from top administrators to individual professors who are being put under stress for what it is that they teach and for the views that they espouse. I mean, the idea that the word critical, you know, can't be used in a university setting. I mean, you know, what is, you know, any sort of analysis, you know, whether of history, political science, sociology, you know, but bringing a kind of critical lens and examining, probing lens to historical events, to theory. So, you know, it is an alarming example of this kind of chilling ripple effect that we see coursing through society as a result of these legislative bans. And, I worry we will see more of it.
So, Suzanne, I want to go back briefly to China, but also talk more about global censorship. Disney this week took down a Simpsons episode from its Hong Kong streaming service. The episode mocked Chinese government censorship. It actually sounds like it wasn't at the behest of the Chinese government, that it might have been Disney itself that had decided to pull the episode. What is this about? And what does it say about how censorship crosses borders and becomes sort of self-inflicted?
Yeah, look, again, this is a phenomenon that we've been documenting for a long time. We did our report, Made in Hollywood, Censored in Beijing, and it was about exactly this phenomenon whereby the Hollywood studios have internalized Chinese government red lines, and they know where you can go and where you can't go, and they avoid that which will set off a tripwire because they know that if they misstep, they risk losing their access to the lucrative Chinese market. So, you know, it's no surprise that Disney took these episodes offline themselves rather than, you know, after a proverbial knock on the door by some Beijing official. They know China's not going to like this, that there's growing intolerance in Taiwan, in Hong Kong, for any discussion of Tiananmen Square massacre, which is the subject of one of the episodes, referenced in one of the episodes. There was just this incident at the university, Hong Kong University, big standoff over a sculpture memorializing the victims of Tiananmen Square that had to be taken down from its place of prominence, in a major academic building on campus. And so, you know, Disney's seeing the writing on the wall, and they think, oh, well, if we, put these episodes of The Simpsons out in Hong Kong, we could lose access. They may shut off The Simpsons entirely, and then, you know, that will impair our revenue stream. And so, you know, that's this sort of disturbing phenomenon whereby Western institutions kind of quietly acquiescent in Chinese censorship, for their own economic reasons. And, we called it out and others called it out. And I think it's extremely important to spotlight this kind of thing so it doesn't just become a new normal.
Well, we'll leave it there. Suzanne Nossel, CEO of PEN America and author of Dare to Speak, Defending Free Speech for All. Thanks, Suzanne. And that's our episode for Friday, December 3rd. Join us next week for the Pen Pod. You can listen to all our episodes at pen.org. Follow us at Pen America on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Stephen Fee for Pen America. This is the Pen Pod. See you soon.